So these private guys, they're carrying the certifications and the licenses, plus they're taking on that liability, which runs a very long time. They have a much higher level of interest to be everything correct than a city inspector does. So the argument the city made is just not really a strong argument if you sit and look at everything that's involved.
Welcome back to the Housing Advocate Podcast, presented by the Southern Utah Home Builders Association. This is our monthly conversation show where we get to talk about housing, all things that affect housing, with people that know a lot about it. This month, I'm really pleased to be joined by Ross Ford, the Executive Officer of the Utah Home Builders Association, so our state association. And we're, I guess, what are we, about a month off of the legislative session. And today's conversation is going to be a little bit of an extension from last month's conversation. You may remember that we spoke with Steve Waldrop last month and got some of his perspective on the legislative session. And today we're going to continue that with Ross. Welcome to the show, Ross.
Thank you. I hate following Steve, though. That's not good, but yeah.
No, this is great. And in particular, this is great because you are absolutely the guru of the building code in particular. It's a particular weakness of mine. As you know, I'm more involved in the land use and sort of development side of this. And so the building code, when things go vertical, my eyes glaze over a bit. And so I'm really excited to have you here today and help you walk our listeners and myself through some of the updates to the overall building environment. So maybe to start with, though, maybe for folks that don't know you very well, could you tell us a little bit about your recent background and or even not so recent background, if you like?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, I'm the executive officer now, so that's what I get to do. But I grew up as a builder, so gives me kind of a unique position as an EO because most EOs are association managers. That's what they do. I grew up as a builder, so it does give me that advantage when I go to a lot of the meetings, especially like building code meetings. Been there, lived that. It's not theoretical to me. It's real life. Mm-hmm. So, and I still build a little bit, not as much. But as a builder, I was a very impatient builder. So I had lots of subcontracting companies under my company. So I had a fairly big company. I usually ran around 50 employees and lots of different of the specialty things. At one point I got to where I could kind of sell everything off and I had a really big wood mill that it was time to either go put about $5 million worth of new equipment into it or sell it. I chose to sell it, but I was way too young to retire. So I ended up getting hired on at UVU and I worked there for 10 years, so became fairly familiar and fairly involved with the education process, which again becomes super beneficial in this role.
Absolutely.
And I got recruited away from there, probably the biggest mistake of my life, to go work for Doppel. So I was the associate director for Doppel for a while. And I don't know if I'm supposed to brag about this. For me, it was a big point. I actually got fired from Doppel. It's hard to get fired from a state job, but I was able to pull it off. The director at the time said that she came in and was obviously really frustrated because there would be things they would do that I felt like were inappropriate. And so I would immediately reach out. My specific assignment at Doppel was construction. So we split up all the licensing and I was over anything that was construction related. The other guy was over all the other stuff, the nurses and doctors and all of that. But I had the contractors and the engineers and, you know, anything that was in that world. Mm-hmm. And when they would try and do things anywhere in state government that seemed wrong, I would reach out to whatever the appropriate association or group of people would be and say, do you guys know this is coming? They are proposing a rule change. You probably should make comments. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so she finally came into my office one day, just furious, and just says, like, we'll never get you on our team. And I was like, you're right.
Wow. Yeah.
If you believe we're going to, as government, sneak things past people, I'm never going to be on your team. Mm-hmm. So I got kicked off. And so here we are now.
Yeah. Wow. That is a interesting background. I knew a little bit of that, but not all of that by any means. And yeah, fantastic preparation for the role you're in. And boy, I sure would wear that as a badge of honor that the Doppel went the way it did. But even that experience actually ties right into what you're doing to this day and in advocating for builders and for our industry. Maybe to pick up a little bit on just kind of diving into some of the this year's legislative session, are there a couple of particular new laws that you would like our listeners to be especially aware of? Bearing in mind that not everybody is able to make it to our monthly luncheon, so some folks may have heard some of this stuff, but many will not have.
Okay. Yeah, and a lot of them that we've heard, and I'm sure Steve talked about last month. See, now I'm admitting I didn't listen to the podcast. This is really bad. No, but he kind of focused on those development tools, right, and the things there, and those are great. So I'm not, to start with, they're way too complicated for me to understand. They're really hard to figure out. So it'll be interesting to see how all those play out, because they're real hard.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. And that is what our conversation zeroed in on. And yeah, I've spent a little bit of time in those, and they are a maze. So I'm very much with you. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, yeah. And then the other thing on those is there are so many stakeholders. To make any one of those deals work, it takes multiple groups to come together, and that's going to be hard. Anyway, so we won't get into those. So mine are more on the construction side.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
One of the big ones I think that will affect a lot of our listeners on this is the stormwater bill.
Mm-hmm.
So, and for everybody to understand, we're not done with it. We ended up running out of time. And so we passed what we had to have something on the books. We already know for sure that we will be on the interim committee study, officially on the interim committee study. So there will be official meetings held and driven by the legislature. And there will be another bill next year to hopefully clean this up. So the bill, and anybody that wants to go look at it, it's House Bill 507. And there's nothing more fun than reading legislation. Go do it. So it clarifies the clean water rules are subject to the Administrative Rules Act. So that's important because the clean water, the EPA, which for Utah is the DEQ, so mm-hmm. the Department of Environmental Quality, they write their own rules, and they believe that because they're under the EPA, they don't fall under the state's Administrative Rule Act. The reason that's important is because every year the legislature has a bill and they approve all of the state's administrative rules. Mm-hmm. If there's a rule that seems inappropriate, we can go to that committee and say, this rule is wrong, and that rule can be stripped out of the law if needs be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for them to understand that has to be there. So we made that really, really clear to them.
Right, right.
The other thing is a city may not require anything that is more stringent than the federal EPA. Right now, that seems obvious to all of us,
mm-hmm.
But that's not how it is. The state's a little bit more stringent, and the cities are a little bit more stringent than the state. We also have a lot of cities that put together their own stormwater policies, I guess, ordinances, right. Uh-huh. However they're going to do it within the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't do that once this bill goes into effect. Now, I guess that's the other thing, important part of this bill. It's delayed to not go into effect until January,
mm-hmm.
because we know we haven't got it right and we've got to work on it. So uh-huh. it'll go into effect. It'll be into effect for weeks before we get a new bill going on it.
I see. Yeah. And if I can jump in for a second. Yeah. I think another thing that you're touching on there that's really important is to once and for all establish some uniformity around that. You know, as you know, in a lot of cases, personnel becomes policy. And so to be able to have something concrete that we can point to, if we're dealing with a rogue stormwater inspector that's sort of inventing a more stringent policy even than the city, that gives us something to look at. So it sounds like we're definitely trending in the right direction.
Right. And that's exactly the premise. That's what we're trying to do, mm-hmm. is get so everybody understands what the rules are.
Yeah.
Nothing about this bill, or nothing about the intent of this bill as we pushed it through, was to lessen those EPA requirements or do anything to damage water.
Right.
We're not trying to do anything to make it easier on a builder and detrimental on the environment.
Right.
But we are trying to get that uniformity, and so we know what to expect.
Yep.
So yeah, exactly right. The other thing is it put into place an electronic inspection tool, which is really cool. Your representative down here,
Caleb,
Walt
probably?
Brooks,
oh, Walt Brooks. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
is helping kind of ramrod this through, that he put together a team a couple of years ago that through the university down here that takes on technical or tech type things. And he's doing this, that he's going to build this app that will do it. So what we will do is, with this tool, instead of having a city inspector show up on your job once a month, somebody on your job will take pictures of what's required, and they will submit them to the city, and the city will do the inspection from their office. So we don't have to pay a guy to be driving around the city as much. Mm-hmm. We don't have to have the vehicles. It should speed them up considerably. Mm-hmm. Now, if we have a builder or developer that is just habitually a problem, and their pictures come in and it's like, wow, that looks wrong, mm-hmm. then the city can go out. Right. There can be in-person inspections. Mm-hmm. But instead of being the routine, it will be under special circumstances. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that helps.
Plus, it seems like that would also sort of create a record as you go as well, so that there's something to appeal to if there's a disagreement about the conditions.
So, yeah, two things on the record. So we started trying to do this inspection tool, an electronic one. The HBA wrote an app to do it 3 years ago, 4 years ago. We tried to do this because we said this will be easier for builders, we believe, and a whole lot cheaper because it's super simple to use. What we found, and I didn't even think about it until you said it, is the history. If you go back for a record and you go, okay, well, we want to know what has happened over time. What have these policies done? How have they affected it? Nobody tracks it.
Right.
Nobody has any idea what we did now. What was it like 10 years ago? What right. is it now? Yep. And are any of our policies even working? Mm-hmm. So you're right. So now this gives us a little bit of a record. So the other thing this will do, and again, back to the uniformity, is it requires the cities to put together a list of their BMPs. So that's the best management practices. So how does the builder control that water? And mm-hmm. there's a variety of ways that can be done. Mm-hmm. What we found is a lot of builders show up in one city and say they just go to work and do what they're going to do. And the city says, no, we don't like that. Mm-hmm. That's not an acceptable approach in our city. Well, the builder doesn't really realize that till they're well into it.
Right.
And so again, we don't know what to expect. We don't know how to bid. We don't know how to do it. So mm-hmm. he says, each city has to put together their list. Say, here's what we will accept in our city.
Mm-hmm.
And so long as the builder uses that, then the city can't give them penalties. They can't say, go back and redo it if they're using that list.
Right. That makes a ton of sense. Creates kind of a safe harbor. So as long as first of all, you know in advance what you're working with. And then as you go, as long as you're following those practices, you're immune. That's great.
Yeah. So hopefully that will help. Again, as builders, a lot of times all we want is certainty. We just want to know what's expected. Right. We'll go do it.
Yep.
One of the other things is that we have, and I think very few cities do it. Everybody kind of relies on the state's template to do the SWIP. But this says the template can't be more stringent than the federal requirements. Again, kind of following that mm-hmm. same premise that we believe the EPA has laid down a standard that is plenty stringent for what we do.
Right.
We're going to stick with that. Mm-hmm. The other one is it follows after the building permit. It says the city has 14 days to complete the review. For me, the SWIP review never seemed like it would be super, super difficult. It seems like 14 days is way too much, but we have some that are going months on a SWIP review holding it up, and they shouldn't be that hard. Anyway, so this gave them a specific time frame. So same thing. Sometimes there will be a requirement for resubmission. We have let them do a resubmission on it. If something's really wrong, again, the resubmission is only 14 days, so it's not a here's your initial review. Now we can do whatever we want. Mm-hmm. You get one resubmission and then it's 14 days. So one of them that has become an issue, I believe, for the cities, I'm hearing more and more, and it was an interesting debate when this came about, but the bill specifically says a city cannot give a fine. When we initially ran the bill, the representative that was the sponsor, Representative Musselman, was adamant that the only penalty would be fines. He's like, we are never, ever, ever going to shut down a job. Reason being, he had a friend who was working on a project and they were pressure washing a roof, a metal roof. And my understanding of the circumstances, his friend was in violation, probably doing something he should not have done based on what it was. Well, the stormwater guy showed up and didn't come and say, hey, that's wrong, you can't do it. He went and got a chain and a padlock, and he locked the gate to the project with the people still in there. He locked them in. Anyway, not good. We've had a lot of builders that did get shut down on jobs, which is very troubling to me, because now the one making the decision may be hurt a little bit financially, but you shut down a job and you're sending those very lowest paid people, often living week to week, paycheck to paycheck. You just sent them home without pay.
Right.
It seems like a very unfair strategy. That said, the end of the negotiation with all the cities and the division was they need that tool. That's the only tool that will really resonate with the builders and get them to perform. So part of the negotiation was they cannot impose fines. So there will be no more fines.
Okay.
And then if they do shut you down, they can't just come and red tag you. They have to come and say, here's a problem, and you have 24 hours to correct it. Mm-hmm. At least 24 hours. Because some of them, the city's going to let them go, well, we're not a big threat. I mean, down here, we know we're going to have a long time before we have rain.
Right.
Get it fixed. And then they can come back. And if it's still not fixed, then they can give you a written penalty with the note that you will get shut down, and you have 24 hours again to correct that, and then they can come shut you down.
Got it.
So to me, that's a big club. I think it's too big of a club for the cities to have. I think it's a big problem to shut a job down.
Right.
But that's where it ended up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the biggest one is just what we talked about that I think will be hard for everybody to figure out is the electronic inspection. And we've kind of already talked about that. So so that bill, and anybody that's, any of the listeners and cities, anybody, know we're going back into negotiations on that. In fact, I have meetings scheduled in the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who has ideas, thoughts, I would love to hear them. Again, we're not trying to get this wrong. We're not trying to hurt the water, but we have to have a better process.
Yeah. Now that's a great update. What's another on your, from your list?
So we've talked about the building inspector bill just a little bit. And any of you that's been watching my social media, we did it. We had hoped to have the ability to hire a private inspector for any reason we want. Mm-hmm. It may be personality conflict. It may be a timing issue, whatever. There should be a path to hire a building inspector. It ended up that the cities really, really did not like that. I was kind of frustrated with kind of the logic of why they didn't like it. And the short answer was they believe that if a builder had the ability to hire a third-party inspector, it would somehow be corrupt. But so long as we hired a city inspector, it would be pure. There would be no corruption, which I personally found really, really offensive to think that, number one, just because you're in private industry, you're corrupt.
Right.
And number two, that just because you work in a public sector, you're not. Because what I hear on the news every night is public sector people that are corrupt.
Right.
Not necessarily building inspectors, but there's nothing about working for the public that makes you pure and honest. And
yeah. And also just even mistake proof. I mean, everybody makes mistakes on all sides of this. So even taking the corruption implication out of it, yeah, we know that errors are, I mean, just honest errors are made as well, right? And certainly we know the personality issue raises its head frequently in building.
Well, and it has to, right? When you've got a regulated and regulator, there's going to be some friction.
Sure.
And sometimes that friction is going to get out of control. And it's like, God, me and that guy just cannot work together.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what we hoped for. The city's pushed back really hard. Ultimately, the argument I just gave you won. They were able to get legislators and say, nope, it will be corrupt. It will be bad. We ended up with a bill that said that you can hire a private inspector after the 3-day time limit. So if a city does not do your inspection within 3 days, then you can hire a private inspector. But it has to be one that's from the city's list, and the city has to provide a list of at least 3. My understanding is a lot of the cities are actually working to do intercity agreements, which could be really, really good. That, you know, down here, if we have Hurricane Washington and St. George that put together that agreement, there may be times where one city is busy and another's a little slower, and they can share those inspectors.
Right.
So for the speed of the inspections, that could be good. All of the information I've got, that's not our problem. We don't have that many cities that are going crazy over. So so it's a start. We need to keep working on it. Again, I started collecting just crazy inspections that have come from city inspectors, things that don't go quite like everybody thought they should. I've got pictures of really big glulam beams that have got great big notches out of them, and then they're just sitting on one stud. I mean, clearly an issue. Mm-hmm. Fully inspected, signed off, cover it with sheetrock. We've got TJI's, the wood eye beams, and the structural integrity of those rely on the top cord and the bottom cord. You can't ever cut those. Now, you can drill a hole in the middle of the webbing and run wire and pipes and all kinds of things, but you cannot cut those top cords. Again, we've got houses where they've cut almost the entire bottom cord out so that they could get the floor level to where they want. Hmm. Totally passed off.
Yeah.
So the city guys aren't always right.
Yeah. Yeah. There needs to be some humility around that kind of infallibility issue. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like you're saying, you know, it'll be interesting to see if there's sort of some sort of inner city agreement that is part of the solution. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not sure that really gets at it. And I'm not sure it's a busyness issue. I suppose it may help a little bit if you have one, if you have an inspector that, if you do a fair amount of volume and they know you and you know them, and you don't have a personality conflict, I guess that could be a little bit of a pressure release valve. But yeah, good steps in the right direction, but yeah, not maybe everything you would hope for.
Right.
For sure.
And it will take little steps, right?
Absolutely.
We'll take it. We'll keep working on it. Just, I guess the one other thing I want everybody to think about too on that, and again, this isn't part of the bill, so it doesn't matter, but it was part of the discussion. There was a worry that this would jeopardize homeowners because, again, the theory was I would be able to hire my own personal inspector who would give me a pass and I would build poor quality homes. To start with, that's not good business for any builder. It leaves the builder incredibly liable.
Yeah, very. Yeah.
So
not good practice.
Yeah.
Short term or long.
Yeah. So I don't see many builders doing it. More importantly, to become a building inspector, first you have to get ICC certified, which comes with a code of conduct. If you violate that code of conduct, you lose your certification. If you don't have ICC certification, you can't be licensed. If you can't be licensed, you can't do this at all. Mm-hmm. So you get certified, then you get licensed. To be able to perform these inspections, you would also have to be insured, similar to what an engineer carries, to say, okay, well, mm-hmm. we're doing this the best we can.
Right.
If there were ever a problem on a house, whoever had the problem can sue the builder and the engineer. They can sue everybody in the world, but they can't ever sue the city. Mm-hmm. The city building inspector is protected by governmental immunity.
Right.
They can't be sued. If you use a private inspector, they can, again, which is why they have to carry mm-hmm. insurance. Mm-hmm. So these private guys, they're carrying the certifications and the licenses, plus they're taking on that liability, which runs a very long time. They mm-hmm. have a much higher level of interest to be everything correct than a city inspector does.
Right.
So the argument the city made is just not really a strong argument if you sit and look at everything that's involved, which mm-hmm. again is why it was kind of offensive to me. It's mm-hmm. like, well, it's just not, it just doesn't hold water.
Right. No, good point. Yeah. And we heard a pretty good story today ourselves. It wasn't strictly an inspection issue, but it was sort of touched on some of those issues as well. And so, yeah, very fresh on my mind as well. What else do you have for us today?
So one other quick one, and I hope nobody has to use this much, but so you know it's there just in case, and it probably is more of a development one, is, and we did talk about it earlier today, but it's the ombudsman process. Mm-hmm. So right now, if you have a conflict with the city, we have a private property ombudsman in the state of Utah, and they're mm-hmm. meant to kind of be our champions. They're there so you can call up and say, give me an opinion. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what the city says. Is that right or is that wrong? Mm-hmm. And they give you an opinion. This law says if they give you that opinion, if you have your dispute with the city, you go to the ombudsman, and the ombudsman, their opinion is in favor of you. And the city says, we're still right. We're going to dig in. We're not changing on this. Mm-hmm. And you decide to take it to court, which is a big decision and one that previously nobody would ever do.
Right.
Because it's at least tens of thousands of dollars,
yep.
easily hundreds of thousands
yep.
of dollars, and months, if not years. It would have to be a really big project and a really big problem to justify the risk of going to court.
And maybe the last one you want to do in that city.
Yeah, right. And it better be the last project you're doing in that city. Yeah, it's just not a sensible thing. On the other hand, for the city to go to court, if they go to court and they win, then they win. If they lose, The only thing they have to do is say, well, gosh, we're sorry. We'll do it right from now on.
Mm-hmm.
There was no penalty for them. So this bill went in and said that it would be, if you go through that process, get through the ombudsman, go through court, you win in all cases, then the judge has the ability, not the requirement. It started out that it would be the requirement. The compromise ended up being it would be the ability. So the judge may issue all of the court costs, which again could be big because that includes mm-hmm. the attorney fees. So mm-hmm. that could be a lot depending on how you're doing. And then compensatory damages, meaning, which you should explain that better than me. But the way I understand yeah. it is it's those damages that we can actually prove.
Right.
So it's not what I could have done if I would have had this money somewhere else. Mm-hmm. It's during the course of this lawsuit, I spent this much money on interest.
Yep.
And so it doesn't help you with any increase of what could have happened, but at least makes you whole on what you lost.
Yeah.
The cities, it's an interesting fight, and it's one that's been going on for 3 years. And the argument of the cities over and over and over was, if we did that, you could bankrupt cities. And of course, we're like, well, how? If you're doing something that you know is wrong, just don't. And they right. says, yeah, but if we end up going to court and we lose, that could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. We could never pay that. And they could never wrap their head around the fact of, yeah, we know exactly
yeah.
what that cost is. We have got it yeah. better than anybody because we're paying it.
Yeah, exactly. As you said, they're compensatory damages. They're not punitive damages. This, you know, these aren't, it's not a tobacco company settlement, you know,
yeah.
types of punitive damages. These are purely those damages that are causally linked to the harm. So yeah, you know that it's, yeah, we very much understand the financial consequences of these things. So no, that's a great summary of that as well. So in just the last few minutes, maybe I'd like to ask you just to step back a little bit from this session and give us your two cents on how you see the landscape of housing and construction law in Utah and how we're doing there from sort of a big picture. Where do you think we're at?
Hard question. You
yeah,
should have started with that one. I'd have
that's
left.
A tough one.
I think the last bill we talked about actually changes that big picture a lot, because I've been involved for more than 20 years, and I've been involved with meetings where we meet with the League of Cities and Towns every summer, a couple times a month, actually very productive, sometimes really difficult and mm-hmm. contentious meetings.
Mm-hmm.
There is a group of really, really smart people in the room that see the problem from different perspectives,
mm-hmm.
which is good. Everything, it's gloves off, everything on the table. Sometimes it's all out war. Here's what we're going to do. And over the course of the 20 years, they've come up with some really amazing pieces of legislation that make the process a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is then you have some cities that just say, well, we don't care. We like it the way we have it.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't follow those laws. So there's been a lot of effort to make everything. And this is from, gosh, how we bring in new land into the city, or how we get rid of islands and peninsulas in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
And you name it, anything to do with land use mm-hmm. gets argued about every year.
Yeah. In fact, didn't LUDM, the Land Use Development Management Act, didn't it sort of come out of this process that you're describing mm-hmm. in the very early
yeah,
days?
Yeah, early on. Yeah, that was early on where mm-hmm. it happened, as they started saying, look, this makes no sense. Every year we go to the legislature and we just yell and scream at each other
mm-hmm.
during those really condensed, really busy 45 days. It's not a good way to craft public policy.
Right.
So they stood back and did it and said, no, we need to create some of this stuff so we can really understand it and do it more carefully. And I think it's been a good process. I think it's been useful. But when you have cities that just refuse to comply, that becomes a problem. And that's where we end up with some of this other stuff where we've talked about, where we're saying, well, we don't know what to expect. We don't know what it'll be from one city to another.
Mm-hmm.
So the ombudsman bill helps because it gives the cities some sort of encouragement to play by the same rules we're all playing by. And if
yeah.
we could get everybody to where they were working on what is currently in place, I think a lot of the problems of what we've been dealing with kind of evaporate.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, I think it's a lot of that, you know, establishing a little bit better uniformity across the cities and trying to bring into the herd some of these stragglers that are maybe holding, you know, better run cities and better run developers hostage to some degree. So yeah, a good optimistic note to end on. So again, I really appreciate you, Ross. Always enjoy talking to you and appreciate so much everything you do for us. And with that, we'll wrap up this episode and thank our listeners for tuning in again. If you like the show, we hope you'll share it and that you'll tune in again next month for another episode. Thanks again. Bye.